Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we talk about the newspaper business today and in the future with Joe Worley. Friday marked his last day as executive editor of the Tulsa World. All told, Worley spent 27 years with the newspaper, including the past 19 as executive editor. During his time, he oversaw the paper's coverage of the Oklahoma City bombing, 9/11, the financial meltdown, as well as the revitalization of downtown Tulsa and the political flip of the state from being mostly Democratic, or at least having a vibrant two-party contest for government control, to return to nearly complete one-party rule, this time by Republicans. At the same time, he led the World during a time of retrenchment, consolidation, and difficult times in general for the newspaper business. Joe Worley began his career at newspapers in Johnson City, Tennessee, and Augusta, Georgia, to the now-defunct Nashville Banner, the afternoon paper there, where he served first as a political reporter, copy editor, managing editor, and finally executive editor, before moving to the Tulsa World in 1987. He joins us today as my guest on Studio Tulsa. Joe Worley, welcome to Studio Tulsa. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Rich.
I guess last Friday was the last day as executive editor of the Tulsa World, a long career. Did you ever expect that you'd end up in Tulsa? I mean, you've been here since 1987 or in Nashville before, the Nashville Banner?
I was fired as the managing editor of the Nashville Banner in 1987.
And only 10 years later, it went out of business.
And I was trying to decide between a couple of possibilities. I needed to go to work desperately. And I'm so happy that I chose to go to the Tulsa World and Bob Lorton hired me to do that job.
What's been the biggest change you've seen in Tulsa since you came here in 87 and today?
Well, when I came here in 87, downtown Tulsa, the main mall was empty. There were a few things. There was the Williams Forum, the ice skating rink, and I thought that was pretty cool, but all the shops were empty. And look at downtown today. It's just fabulous, and it's going to get even better.
What do you attribute that to? Do you think, I mean, 87 was the height of the oil bust, really, but is it more than oil?
Oh, it's more than oil. I think our economy's improved, and voters, citizens were willing to take a gamble and build the BOK Center, and they supported a downtown ballpark. And I think the city of Tulsa realized that we can be better than what we were. And I hope they'll do that again if a good river proposal comes forward.
That idea of investing in the city again, that was not really a part of Tulsa in the 80s and 70s.
No, it wasn't. And I can remember, I think there were at least three votes. There was the Tulsa project around 1995, 96, and there was another project around in the late 1990s, and then there was another vote. It took us several votes to get to where we were willing to build the BOK Center, and eventually, you know, Mayor Taylor, I believe, headed up the project that moved the ballpark into reality.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of hard work by our public officials to get citizens educated to the point where they're willing to commit their tax dollars, and that's a good process. But, boy, it took a lot of votes to get us to where we are today.
What would you say the biggest story during your time at the World was?
Well, I've tried to sort that out in my head, and I can't say one was more important than the other. You know, very close to me and all of us in Tulsa was the Oklahoma City bombing in 1995. I had had my job as executive editor 19 days when the bomb went off. And our staff responded so well to that story. I mean, that story was on A1 for 2 months. And we had staff, reporters, and photographers living out of motels and less than ghetto-like conditions for many weeks. You know, it takes a lot of stamina to work a story like that. And, of course, everybody remembers 9/11, where you were and what you were doing, and that story obviously was on A1 for months and months. Mm. I mean, those two obviously stand out, but I was also a young editor when Watergate broke. And I identified with a lot of those people. Senator Howard Baker was from Tennessee, and that's where I was working at the time. Fred Thompson was a country lawyer from Nashville, and I knew him. And so I had not only the personal identity with some of those people who were involved in Watergate, I think everybody in the nation was engaged in the Watergate story.
Now, you mentioned that you were executive editor for 19 days when the Oklahoma City bombing happened. You were managing editor before that. What is the difference between a managing editor and the executive editor?
Well, the executive editor, I mean, I was lucky. I had the best managing editor possible for 19 years, Susan Ellerbach, and she's my successor. And I'm so happy for her because, you know, she's going to do a great job. And Mike Strain will be the new managing editor, and he's going to do a great job. The difference is, as executive editor, you're making the final decision. You know, quite often Susan and I agreed on many, many decisions. We thought a lot, you know, similarly on a lot of issues, but we argued a lot. I mean, it's important to have arguments about how you cover the news.
I always thought the managing editor was sort of the day-to-day person who basically decided the main areas that you're going to cover, or is that the executive editor?
Well, at the Tulsa World, and I think a lot of it has to do with the personalities involved, I paid a lot of attention to daily detail, as well as tried to fight the budget battles with the ownership of trying to decide where we were going. So the managing editor and the executive editor are almost alter egos. I mean, they work together throughout the day. They're just enough. There's plenty to decide and plenty of things that need attention. For me, I tried to stay as involved as possible because that's my first love is the news business. It was not being in charge of the budget. That was the that was the last thing I wanted to do, but that's part of the executive editor's role.
Yeah. How did you get started in the newspaper business? Were you a journalism student and started out as a cub reporter, or were you a person that actually started maybe as a copy boy and moved your way up? Or?
It was 1969, and my dad told me I had to get a job, and he was tired of supporting me, and so I was waiting to get into the National Guard in Tennessee because there was a Vietnam War going on, and they were about to draft me. Dad said, "Son, you got to go to work. I can get you a job at the newspaper. I know the publisher." So I got a job for $2 an hour working for the Johnson City Press Chronicle, and about the only thing they trusted me with was obituaries. And so I did obituaries for a while. And, you know, like any journalist, you kind of crawl your way up through the business, and then they let me do briefs, and then I got to do some police work. And it was all the things that reporters in, at a small daily newspaper do.
And eventually you moved to Nashville, the Nashville Banner.
I went from Johnson City to Augusta, Georgia for one short year, and then at the Nashville Banner, I was a political reporter, assistant city editor, eventually city editor, and eventually managing editor and executive editor.
In Nashville, it happened a little earlier because you were an afternoon there.
We were an afternoon paper. We were the Tulsa Tribune of Nashville.
Of course, that felt the financial pinch first, before morning papers really did. I mean, both types of papers felt pinches, but afternoons were hit harder.
Right. The Nashville Banner hung on, I think, to 1998. The Tulsa Tribune closed its doors in 1992.
Yeah. And so you've sort of been an editor in an era where, if anything, it's do more with less.
It's been a challenge. Obviously, the media industry, and when I say media, I mean TV, radio, print, magazines. The media industry has been totally changed because of all the new media opportunities.
You know, the newspaper business today, there are a lot of pessimists that say that it's definitely going to change and it's not a great business to be in. How would you answer that?
I'm not a pessimist. I'm an optimist, and I'm absolutely convinced that we're going to have a print paper for a very, very long, long time. I'll be dust, and I think maybe it's going to be a generation or two before the print industry ever disappears, if it ever disappears. I'm not convinced it'll totally go away. But what so many of our readers have found out, and I found out, is the Internet, being able to access the Tulsa World, TulsaWorld.com, being able to access the Tulsa World E-Edition. I mean, it is a wonderful place to go read news that's authoritative, it's accurate, and it's written by professionals.
Mm. Now, how do you suppose that newspaper business is going to change? I mean, it's already changed quite a bit. I mean, break stories on the web more than you break in the pages of the World.
We break every story we can on the web. Yeah. Occasionally, we might hold one back for print if we feel like it's a story we can hold back for print and make it A1, like the Oklahoma poll that we ran out on A1 this past Sunday. It was about, you know, who's going to win the upcoming elections. That one we held for print. But 99% of our other stories we break on the web. as soon as we get it and as soon as we believe it's accurate, good information, we'll go ahead and publish it on the web. Now, how is this business going to end up? I don't know. I'm convinced that there are even other ways that we can't dream of right now that we're going to be able to provide good, accurate news content about Tulsa and Northeast Oklahoma to our readers.
You know, you mentioned the fact that you can get accurate information on Tulsa World on their website, but a consumer has every option from the New York Times to the Los Angeles Times to, you know, the Times of London, for that matter, as possible choices. Does that change the focus of the newspaper to being ultra-local or what exactly?
Ultra-local is very much what we are. I mean, I believe it's 2005, 2006, Bobby Horton called us into a meeting and we talked about how we needed to change our focus and how we needed to be locally driven. And I think we've done a good job of that. I can tell you when that move first started, I wasn't absolutely convinced that was the right direction. It was absolutely. Bobby Horton was right. And that's the only way an institution like the Tulsa World can survive. We can't compete with the New York Times. Don't pretend to. But what we can be is we can be the best news source for Tulsa, for Sand Springs, for Broken Arrow, for Owosso, and all the other suburbs, and all the other communities in northeastern Oklahoma. That's what we can be. Hmm. And if people want authoritative information, accurate information about where they live and where they play, we can do that for them.
One thing I've noticed about the paper in the last couple of years, there's been certainly more long-form journalism pieces that start on A1 and continue through the newspaper. Has that been a conscious decision based on the reality that the people who are reading the paper are obviously really more interested in the news than, say, somebody who's just going to read it online?
Well, there are lots of words thrown out for it. You called it long-form journalism. Other people call it storytelling, just good storytelling. Mm-hmm. There are lots of ways to describe what we try and do, but investigative public service journalism is absolutely critical to what we are as a newspaper and as a media company. We want people to understand that we're willing to go the extra mile to report a story thoroughly, and we're willing to be totally balanced in the way we present that. And yes, that does take a large investment in both in reporters' time and editors' time, everybody to present that particular story. But, you know, that's absolutely what media companies, newspapers ought to be doing.
One of the other things that have happened in the last few years is you're actually coordinating your coverage and collaborating with other news entities, in this case, the Daily Oklahoman. How's that worked out? Do you think that's something you're going to see more papers do, collaborate in adjacent markets?
When 2009, Ed Kelly, who was the editor of the Oklahoman, and I got together, and you know, it was kind of a clandestine meeting, and at the first occasion, we couldn't figure out a way to make it happen.
Now, let me say, prior to 2009, did you guys consider yourselves competitors?
Well, we were absolutely. Well, you know,
he wanted Old Mulgee.
I wanted to beat the Oklahoman on any story I could. You know, and it was. It was difficult at first to make friends with our enemies. and so in 2009, we held a meeting, and very frankly, we couldn't come to any kind of agreement. And then later in 2009, we held a second meeting, and he had lost staff, and I'd lost staff, and we were just in an economic position that if we were really going to provide good news coverage for our readers, we had to do it. And so we convinced our publishers that this was the best decision, and I'm glad Bobby Horton agreed to let us do that. And it was difficult, very frankly, for our editors and reporters to kind of collaborate in the beginning, but I think we've become much better. And to answer your question is, you know, I think all newspapers that have been decimated, and most have been, by the economic times need to consider this.
Yeah. Of course, the other aspect of collaboration is between nonprofit entities. You see, certainly in California, with there's a number of public interest sort of journalism projects here in Oklahoma. There's Oklahoma Watch. Do you think that's a new model, or is that going to be a limited ability to affect news?
I think it's coverage? Going to differ from state to state. Oklahoma Watch has done some good journalism in the state, and you know they've played an important role. I think there's even more opportunity than what we've done with broadcast entities like KWGS or mm-hmm. even a television station. I think we always have to look for, is there a way we can work together? Because we all have a limited amount of resources, and there are really important stories that need to be covered, and there aren't enough journalists to do it.
Let me ask you that big question. Do you feel like there are stories that are not being covered today just because of limitations of say, newspaper staff, radio staff, television staff in our city?
Absolutely. I wish there were, many more journalists out covering our government and covering business that goes on in this community. There are a lot of stories that aren't being told, can't be covered because of our limitations.
My guest today is Joe Worley, a newly retired executive editor of the Tulsa World, but you're not leaving the Tulsa World entirely. I think you're going back to writing, I guess, from what I hear.
Leaving the newsroom would be a real stretch for me because I've loved this newsroom. I've loved every newsroom I've been in. There's a vibrancy among news people who are dedicated to covering their communities, and so I love being there and learning what people are doing, and maybe it'll stimulate me to do something good.
Are you planning to write, or what exactly?
I'm going to be writing some pieces on A2, page A2. We have a feature called Way Back When. It refers to news stories that happened on this day, either last year or 40 years ago. I think it's a well-read, particularly among some of our elder readers who like to reminisce about certain stories.
So you're going to add more color to that?
I'll just be writing some of those pieces. Debbie Jackson's been doing that recently. Gene Curtis did it before Debbie. And so now it's going to be my duty.
Yeah. I guess that's where old journalists go, huh?
Old journalists go to die on A2, I guess.
Well, I want to ask you, what was the toughest day in the newsroom here in Tulsa?
Well, I don't know if it was Oklahoma City bombing or 9/11. You know, I can remember those days pretty vividly. I mean, it was our journalists wanted to be home with their families. You know, I think there was a lot of personal concern among all Americans, and so there were our reporters and editors who were working pretty diligently some long hours when, in fact, their families wanted them to be home with them. And those were difficult days.
Yeah. I know that you've been an increasing rarity in the newspaper business for many years during your time here in Tulsa. That was being an editor of a locally owned, family-run newspaper, a large newspaper, and that's really was a rarity. Now you've spent about a year and a half since BH Media Group bought the paper. Are there advantages to each side? What is your preference now that you're out of the executive offices?
Well, I'm out of the executive offices, but let me just say a couple of things. One is the Lortons were absolutely... Bob and Bobby Lorton, Roxanna Lorton, were absolutely the best owners I've ever worked for. They gave us a lot of support in the newsroom. They gave us a lot of freedom to report stories that we needed to have to do our jobs to the best of our ability. But obviously the time came for them financially to make a decision to sell the newspaper. And now we have a new owner, Berkshire Hathaway Media. And Warren Buffett happens to have very deep pockets. And I'm pretty happy, very happy. We have a new publisher named Bill Masterson, mm-hmm. who's also been very supportive. And we're not taking orders from Warren Buffett about our editorial pursuits. They've given us absolute freedom so far in the last year and a half. I will say that, we're a corporate newspaper now, so we need to make reports often to Omaha. That's where the headquarters of BH Media is located. And we have to make reports to our corporate headquarters. And it's not like walking 30 feet down the hall and getting a yes or no answer. Getting a yes or no answer out of Omaha is a little slower sometimes. And it takes a little bit more diligence on behalf of now Susan Ellerbach to find out we need your support on this issue or that issue.
Hmm. Is it more editorial positions that you speak to, or actually
financial
or news, just news coverage and the ability to cover things?
I mean, Susan Utterbach's job now is to get the best financial support she can for the Tulsa World. And those decisions and that support, they're made by Bill Masterson and Susan Utterbach, but oftentimes there are questions that have to go on up to Omaha, and you have to seek out the vice president of news in Omaha who can help steer the decision in a particular way. They're not decisions about news. It's decisions about financial support, and here's what we can support you with, and here's what we can't.
Yeah. Of course, for those outside of the newspaper business, they assume when a paper takes an editorial position, they wonder if it's the staff, whether it's the publisher, or the owners.
Well, it's a joint decision. As executive editor, I was in charge of the newsroom. I was in charge of the reporters. There's the editor of the editorial pages, and that's Wayne Green. Mm-hmm. And he leads an editorial board that's made up of several of the editorial writers like Mike Jones and Julie Delcourt and Bruce Plant. And there are also some other people. Now I'm off the editorial board, and Susan Utterbach and Mike Strain and Jason Collington and Laura McIntosh. And it's a kind of a, I don't want to call it a committee decision. It's not a total democracy, because ultimately Bill Masterson is the publisher of the newspaper.
The publisher has
so the when it comes down and there's disagreements like about election endorsements, sometimes those aren't always clean and easy decisions. Sometimes there's disagreement, and we usually try and argue that out. But ultimately, Bill Masterson can make that call.
You know, in the Lorton years, I mean, I think the editorial pages had a certain viewpoint of the world. And then when the election endorsements came in, it was maybe a little different at that particular point. Is that where a publisher is really going to assert his authority more?
That's where a publisher is often going to assert that authority.
Yeah.
Is during those election years. Yeah. But the Lortons, obviously, Bob wanted us to be very supportive of good things that could happen in Tulsa. He was sort of what I call a fiscal conservative and maybe a social moderate.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the newspaper strayed very far from that kind of position since the change in ownership. I think we're fairly conservative when it comes to fiscal positions, and I think most of the new editorial pages are fairly moderate.
Now that you're no longer setting the newsroom agenda, if you will, I want to ask about, you've had the benefit of sort of watching the news coverage of the city for, almost 30 years. What would you consider the biggest source of concern to move the city forward? What do you think the biggest thing that the city really needs to address to move the city forward?
Well, I mean, our city funding and our state funding is not what it should be. If you look at Mayor Bartlett, he is concerned every day about how can I provide public safety and the basic necessities of life. And all too often, there are not good and important programs that aren't being funded because of the lack of funding by cities in Oklahoma. They need to figure out some way at the legislative level, another revenue source that cities can access. Mm-hmm. And as far as state funding goes, I know we all want lower taxes, but my feeling is I'm willing to pay a little bit more if I can get a better service for it. I think efficiency in government is very important, and our readers want us to push for that. But I am absolutely convinced that our government can do better than what we're doing right now.
Well, as you well know, in the lawsuit over DHS, you have caseworkers that have doubled or tripled the caseload that's recommended. That's still a case in our state. That's efficient government, but it's not perhaps the best government.
No, it's not the best government, and our teachers are underpaid, and our correction workers are underpaid, and we have too many people in jail, and we need to figure out a way to make this more efficient, that's more cost-effective, and perhaps then with that saved efficiency, then we can put that into some programs that would be better serving our public.
Now, this gets in the unusual role of what an executive editor is, being in charge of the newsroom. You have these opinions, but when you're covering the news, I assume you try to set those opinions aside and say, okay, you know, how are we going to cover the news each day? How do you manage that?
Well, you're in that same business too, Rich. You kind of have.
I can have a few opinions on this show.
You can have opinions on this show, but literally, when you're covering the news, you just need to make sure that there's a balance in the story, so that if there's a conservative voice that says we ought to go this direction, you're covering that voice, and mm-hmm. if there's a more moderate or a more liberal voice that says we ought to be going in this direction, you cover that. It's, you know, what journalists are trained to do. You have to look for the holes in each position and try to, you know, develop your story so that the reader can see that there are varying positions on certain issues.
My guest today is Joe Worley, a newly retired executive editor of the Tulsa World. He has served in that position since 1995, joined the paper in 1987, I believe, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. As you look forward, how do you imagine the newspaper business is going to look 5, 10 years, 20 years down the road? I know from the radio business, I hear all sorts of ideas that, you know, we may be turning our transmitter off and it will just be a media empire at some point down the road. I've heard the same story about newspapers, that you'll only be a web version. What do you really think the newspaper business is going to look like 10 years, 20 years from there?
I'm absolutely, TulsaWorld.com is going to continue to flourish, and our online offerings will continue to expand. Our staff has adapted pretty well and will continue to adapt to new technology changes. But I'm also convinced that there's a certain amount of our audience that wants a print newspaper on their front doorstep in the morning. And I am absolutely certain 5 years from now that will continue. 20 years from now, I'd be willing to make that bet. If you want to make it today, I'll put some money down. But beyond 20 years, I don't, you know, it's possible that we will no longer have a printed news product. But I, you know, even for people who are in the magazine business or in the newspaper business, I would be willing to bet there's always going to be some demand for print. It will be a different kind of audience than what maybe I was serving when I got in this business in 1969. Then we were a general interest publication. I think we would have to be more niche for a more educated, maybe a little wealthier kind of audience that would want that kind of printed product.
All right. Well, Joe Worley, we appreciate your time. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, it's been fun, and I appreciate you inviting me on today.
The former executive editor of the Tulsa World, Joe Worley, this past Friday marked his last day as executive editor before retirement. He spent 27 years with the World, including the past 19 as executive editor. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.